Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. I'm Emily.
I'm James.
And I'm Chantal.
Woo! She's here.
She jumped in.
Nah, this is good. You're going to introduce yourself. This is what we're going to give you the floor now. Just talk about Chantal. Now, your background, your story. Mm-hmm. Give us a bit of insight.
So my name is Chantal Velasque, and nobody can say my name properly. So my background's French. I've been in the data space for 25 years. Data and analytics mainly. The first part of my career was in consulting and then moved to corporate Australia, different challenges. Very passionate about diversity, so cultural background and gender diversity as well. So very involved in women in data communities.
Yes, I was going to say you're a very, very big advocate for our Women in Data Network. Very good MC on our last one for data governance, which is awesome. You should maybe be a TV presenter or something. That's what I know.
Very strong accent.
Yeah. No, you were really good at picking up what they were saying and then like tying it back. You know, like it's a bit of a skill
because
there.
I had domain knowledge, that's why.
Yeah, maybe.
So I knew what they were talking about. So
True. Well, tell us like how your career's evolved into data analytics. Obviously you mentioned consulting, but like was that always a big thing for you, data, and did you really know that we were walking into data?
Look, I studied finance and management, so it was nothing to do with IT, but after 6 years of study in France and in the UK, I did my final internship in the finance department of a big telco in France, so equivalent of Telstra. And they were using business objects as a software. So business objects is now part of SAP. It's been taken over. But at the time, was independent. And I started, part of my internship was to deliver some reporting, some numbers. And I started to use the tool. But I was very frustrated because I had to go to the IT team every time I wanted a new column, a new piece of data, and change the reports. So I decided that I would learn how to use the tool from an end user perspective. And the more I was manipulating it, the more I got saving on the tech side. And I ended up doing complex installations and getting all the settings sorted in my first job. And then I got good with the software. So business objects for the software company hired me. I was the only female consultant in the team at the time. And so I got super techie at the time. And then I moved to more leading teams and then project management, and now program director. But
interesting. How was it being the only woman back then? Like, and how has it evolved, let's just say?
Look, I was lucky because my colleagues were absolutely awesome. We were a really close team, and quite often we were sent to little country towns in France, far, far away, and that was just us. We had to be really close, otherwise we wouldn't have survived. But no, it was good fun, and they were really good to me. But I think the challenges were more about how you get perceived, not by your colleagues, because they know what kind of work you're doing day in, day out. It was the broader perception on your woman, you know, you're not as technical as the other guys, or maybe, you know, they like you because you're engaging, you're a nice person, and, you know, you have a good stakeholder management approach. But it took them a while to recognize how good I was, technically speaking.
Interesting. That sounds sort of like textbook, though, doesn't it? fast forward now, obviously, we talked about you being quite a big woman and data advocate, obviously, networking group perspective, but you mentioned you're like mentoring, coaching. That's just part of your day-to-day, I suppose, from being a data leader in bigger corporations, leading big programs of work and things like that. So how has it sort of changed and evolved for women?
Look, we still have challenges, right? So quite often you're the only woman in a room full of architects, guys. And I quite often I'm telling the story. I was working for one of the big banks, and room full of architects, and I turned up with my beautiful green dress. And they went, okay, you can sit down there. And they were not expecting me to say a word because they were all wearing jeans and t-shirts and sneakers. And they were like, she's so different, so surely we cannot, you know, learn from each other. But yeah, I mean, it's just an example, but I think it's getting much better. But but the percentages of women in, let's say, data engineers or business analyst roles is really small still. Yeah. We can do better. It's a big challenge. It just need more mentoring. The other thing I reckon I was missing is role models.
Mm.
At the time, there were no kind of women to look up to. I mean, in my consulting life, and most of my bosses, if I look back until I moved to Australia, really were guys. So I really had to wait up to late in my career to have super inspiring women, and I made a few, so I'm super lucky.
Yeah.
But I think women shouldn't hesitate to do a bit more self advocacy and put them out there, because the young women who are coming after us, they need role models.
Yeah, for sure. And your remit obviously covers data. Is it specific to governance, or are you kind of covering multiple different avenues that you kind of touch on? The engineers and the like insights analysts and the data scientists, and like, I suppose then follow up is, do you notice there's a bigger lack of diversity in not just gender but even across the board in each of those skill sets? And
yes, and that's such a good question. So in my journey, I started with reporting and business intelligence, and then moved to more kind of all-star data warehouses and then data lake, and obviously machine learning with CBA and more AI focused. Look, I think we have such a big challenge ahead of us, because with AI, we're reinventing the world we live in, right? Mm. And depending on how you feed your models and how you build them, you cannot have like a sea of dudes in the Silicon Valley, white guys, you know, in their 30s, defining what our world's going to look like.
Mm.
So I really believe it's now we need a lot of diversity and cultural and age and whatever to build all the new models now.
Yeah, to make AI effectively more accurate. Absolutely. And more helpful. Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about AI. Because the buzzword, like, no, I'm just kidding, but you know,
so funny. Last week I was part of a panel with the awesome SAP BTP team here. So Dr. Kim Osters, and she was facilitating the panel, and our theme was AI dilemmas. And similar question, right? Yeah. So what are our challenges, what we can do better? It's such a broad question, but the funny bit is it's trending, right? It's a buzzword. But when I talk about AI with people around me who are not in this space, so let's say the girls at the gym, for them, AI is chatbot.
Yeah.
And it's much, much broader than that. And the tricky bit, I think, is as soon as it's implemented, it's not AI anymore. It's part of a product.
Mm.
So you talk about AI when you say, I have this program and I'm solving this problem using all these tools and these models. But once it's embedded, you're not saying, actually, process is automated because of AI. You say, this is my process, and it's optimized, and it's a process itself. Mm. So it's just, you stop talking about it once you deliver, it's the product.
Yeah.
So I think people are losing sight of how it's embedded actually on what we're consuming or the services we're using already, because you're losing sight of how it's embedded now.
Yeah, and I feel like it's that all the words you just mentioned, like optimize, embed, and all those kinds of things, like, are under the umbrella of AI, but everyone's just throwing AI at it to sort of describe, but actually it's not description, it's just like blanket, you know? And then people don't understand what it means underneath, you know?
Yeah.
Have you found that?
Yeah, a little bit, that's what I was going to say. I feel like it's even, you can relate it to data, that people are like, oh, we need better, like, you know, data processes. Like, well, what is that? Is it engineering? Is it pipelines? Is it your warehouse? Is it reporting? So I think it's interesting to hear that, because I do think as well, when you talk to people outside the tech world, AI is just seen as a chatbot, or it's now seen as the, you can do like an image or a little movie for like 15 second clip. which is funny how like we get off that gimmick, but there's actually so many better uses for it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's so true. This reminded me of that news story this morning with Kate Middleton and how she AI photoshopped her thing. And there was hands everywhere. And that's what people think of AI. Yeah. They're just like, oh, that's cool. That's what you can do with it. But anyway. So you're obviously, you know, amazing woman in data. You're covering multiple different avenues. You've worked for a lot of different businesses. How much of your family knows what you do?
Not many. I think... my hubby probably knows. My kids are doubted. They think I'm a superstar, like talking to people all the time and not being shy to turn up at a conference, even if I don't know anyone. And leading teams. That's, I think, what they understood. My family in France, absolutely no chance.
Really?
Or maybe project manager kind of thing.
Oh my gosh. And what does your if your husband was asked to describe what you do for a living, what do you think he would say as a sentence?
Oh. Let's phone a friend.
Yeah.
No, I think he would say, yeah, leading big transformation programs in the data and analytics and AI world, I guess. Or transformational programs.
I feel like that's pretty simple, eh? That's actually really well articulated. Lots of people do it like the opposite way. What about, I suppose, for you, being across a lot of different programs and projects of work, you've been exposed probably to a lot of different data problems. Like, what's the biggest stuff up you've had or maybe you've witnessed with data? Yeah.
Oh, look, I think the one for which I panicked big time was a long time ago. So working in France for business subjects. So we were in one of these little country towns. And so I was with three colleagues and we all really good friends, actually. I saw them last time I went to France in September. And we were deploying a HR dashboard. And there we had three environments, dev, test and prod. And he deleted the table and he thought it was in dev and it was in prod. And he just freaked out and he didn't want to say that to the rest of the team. And then he ended up saying, I think I messed up with all that stuff. And for like 10 minutes, everybody went blank, sweaty, and just think, what are we going to do? And anyway, so we had a backup. So that was all right, but it was a bit tense in the room.
Oh my God, I feel like I would have not reacted very well to that. I'm like quite like a detailed person. If I'm caught off guard, I'm like, oh my God. What I was going to ask you is like, you're obviously leading teams is a big, big part of your job. Like if you were to explain your leadership style and like how, what you foster from a culture perspective and I suppose like elevate teams and empower them, what would you say that would be?
I'm a team player. I keep saying to the teams, you are the experts, I'm not, right? So tell me how it is, and my role is to QA what they're saying, what they're proposing, and challenge them to make sure we're going on the right track. I really see my role as a facilitator, so removing issues, boulders, or when they have challenge, trying to support them the best I can and make sure they have the resources they need, so can be extra people, like extra funding, you know, the right tools. It's very much this kind of supporting role, a bit of a servant leader. I really like when my my team makes me redundant, when they take ownership and they're so in control and they know what they're doing, but they don't actually need to talk to me.
Yeah.
It's just I can move on to the next challenge.
Yeah, well, that's good. And what about, like, I suppose on the other side of the coin, when you're building out teams, like you would have had so many interviews in your time. What's the worst one you've experienced? There's probably heaps.
Interview. Oh, look, I think this once. So the job was in Sydney, the head office in Melbourne. The interviewer was in Singapore and I was on holidays in France in a little campsite. And there was no internet and I had to ask, there was some kind of concierge over there and I went to the guy and I said, can I use your office for just an hour because I need to have an interview? And he gave me his office, and I sat down there, like, wearing shorts and sinclair, having my interview. So it was summer in France and winter here. It was a bit funny with all the locations and people talking to me from everywhere.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's kind of reality, though, isn't it, nowadays? Like, everyone's just used to the remote life.
And with the time difference, I had to organize with everybody.
Oh, my God, that's dedication, that. From a campsite, like, I'm picturing, like, a cabin, woods, etc.
Yeah, not far from the beach, though. But
that's good. What would you say you've noticed about the world and the data space changing and evolving, like, most, like, I suppose the most common thing?
What word?
No, world, in the world. Sorry. See, there you go. We're even now.
You need to learn how to speak French, because it's easier than understand French people speaking English.
Yeah, I actually really tried to learn French, but I did it for 2 years at school.
All right.
Now it's just like evaporated, though.
Need to practice.
Yeah, I can make you feel much worse. I did it from kindergarten to year eight, and I really don't remember much.
You did French in kindergarten?
Yeah, what I do remember from that was, as we detour from your question, is that I remember the teacher taught us how to count, but then gave us a piece of paper. We put it across our forehead, and you had to write the numbers 1 to 10 backwards, but in English.
Oh.
So it was confusing. I don't know how much French we actually learned, but it was a mixture.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. My question. I can't remember. No, like, how, like, what would you say is the thing that's changed the most, or changing the most, about the data world?
I think I'll tell you what hasn't changed. We're still trying to solve problems. The technology obviously is just much more efficient and powerful, quick, and, you know, so much more you can do. But at the end of the day, it's not about the technology itself. It's what's the problem, listen to your stakeholders and identify what their problems are, and making sure you're delivering for a purpose. Before we were doing it with the tools we had with MS Access back in the days, and now we have super powerful tools, but it's still, still solving the same problems, you know, more, being more efficient, being more quick, cheap,
better quality. So you're saying the same problems still arise from, like, ages ago, but we just, like, focused on, I don't know, the same problem but using different tools? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, different tools. Sorry, look at you in a laugh. Because you're laughing at me. No. How do I answer that? Sorry. I think we're going to be much more productive, right? You don't have to waste your time doing, like, stupid work, because you can automate it, and you can add much more value. I was thinking an example I heard about last week. You know, with MS Copilot, you're going to be able to write your Tableau reports or Power BI, right? So what's going to happen to all the people who are currently working on building these reports? And actually, if you're smart about it, they're going to be able to do much more with but the outcome of what the reports are showing, and they're going to be able to use that to add more value. So the thing is, in Australia, we have problems with, you know, productivity. So that's going to help big time, I believe.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I suppose the, like, connecting piece is, like, people who are building reports, they need to be able to interpret properly and actually add value. So that probably, if someone's in a reporting role and they don't know how to sort of, I don't know, make themselves indisposable, maybe they need to look at that kind of piece and be able to engage with stakeholders better, make recommendations, like, look at the charts and not just say this is what it's saying, but actually what it, like, could potentially mean if you recommend X or whatever. Yeah, because that's more business impact, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many examples on which you can do better. Healthcare is amazing, and how you can identify problems before they occur.
What
education.
Would you say? Yeah. What would you say is the most, you just mentioned industries there, what would you say is the most like immature and behind in industry wise from data perspective, in your opinion?
look, I think small enterprises, because you can only spend your funding on, you know, what is necessary straight away. So little businesses, I think, will have a challenge. Saying that, I've seen recently the government is putting some, not internships, I think they're giving a bit of money away, or and some free trainings as well for small companies, so they can go and train themselves and see, you know, what are the use cases for them to develop that a bit. But, you know, little shops, little cafes around, I think that's going to be, it cannot be in their priority straight away.
Yeah.
Unless they see a clear benefit, you know.
Yeah. Mm. It's always hard because you've got like a knowledge overload as well these days in our world. So like you're overloaded with so many options that if you're a small business, you're like, where the hell do I start? You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I think actually with everybody has the same problem, even big corporates, it's prioritization of your use cases, right? Yeah. And it's a tricky bit, but for me, it has to be aligned to your strategy. And you're a big corporate, or you are a little tiny business. At the end of the day, you need a business strategy. So I think that's how you're going to play it out. Is it make more money or make more savings or have a better customer experience? It just depends on where you want to focus your effort.
Yeah, you've got to have a clear strategy. That's a golden nugget.
Yes.
What about influences on your life from a work or personal life that's fed into work, but like maybe your most amazing colleague that you've worked with and why? Or
so many. I really believe I'm a people person. I really like interacting with people and knowing their stories and going out, you know, for coffee and learning more about how they got here. So a lot of people obviously had amazing mentors. So I think, there's no denying they made a big difference in my life. I had some amazing colleagues. You know the ones where you're in a meeting room and you don't have to speak, you just go, and they know what's happening.
The eye roll, the eye contact or something.
Like, you know, work husbands and stuff. And I think, you know, everybody, I'm super lucky. I have a lot of amazing colleagues and people really care. And I think the older I get, the more specific I am with the people I'm hanging out with. I don't want to waste my time with like what I call energy vampires, the ones who are sucking the energy out of me. I really like the energy, the buzz around people who are really keen, proactive, and just, you know, we're feeding out of each other in terms of energy. You know, and the real friends who are supporting you and cheer you up when you're successful and who are there for you when you're down. I think, with age comes a bit more wisdom on how to select the right, your tribe, you know, the people you want around.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I hear that, like, from what you've just said there, it's really important to go to those networking groups. What are the key groups that you tend to go to and recommend?
The first one is Women in Data Australia with you guys. So, a few events, successful events. And then the second one I joined recently is called ADAS Tribe. ADA for Analytics, Data, and AI. Yeah. And it's named after Ada's Ada Lovelace. We are all volunteering. We're doing it in the evenings and weekends. We have a few pillars. The first one is about networking. So we have a monthly event and with different themes, and we're inviting special speakers to share their experience. And then the second pillar is mentoring. So I'm going to be the lead on this one, but we're going to start a mentoring program. And then there's a partnering component to it as well, where we're going to help universities and a few organizations out there with their uplifting the women in their organizations. So super happy to be part of it. But the women, they're amazing, all very dedicated and trying to move a dial.
Awesome. I have heard a lot about those, obviously women in data, but a lot of about Ada's tribe as well. It's really well known and it's reputable on the market, so that's good. I suppose from another side of the coin, in terms of feeding the brain, what kind of books have you really valued for your own career that you could share?
The first one, I said, is The Moment of Lift from Melinda Gates. And it's about all these things happening in your life and then finding the defining moments to move you forward and give you the energy to make a change, well, make a difference in the world, really. The second one will be a book I'm really trying to finish, but it's a bit frustrating. It's called Invisible Woman from Caroline Criado Perez from the UK. And it's about, it's full of data, and it's how demonstrating how the world we live in has been built for men for a long, long time. So testing of seat belts were done on guys only, not women. And if you're pregnant, forget about it. So the seat belts, there were so many examples on urban design not made to facilitate women's lives, because they do connections of it. They're moving around to drop off the kids, look after the grocery shopping, these kind of things. But very locally, while the partners usually go from the suburbs to the city to work. So, but the way everybody's moving traditionally is very different. Mm. And the urban design is not necessarily done to facilitate both. So a lot of examples like that. The book is a bit, as I say, a bit frustrating, because you read a chapter and you think, oh, it's really bad, actually. But I'll finish it one day. And I think it's very important, because this was written before AI, really. Mm. And now we need to have this diversity in mind where we're building our new models. So make sure that this problems will not arise again. And I mentioned just another one, so it's more an author. It's Toby Walsh, is a chief scientist at University of New South Wales at the AI Institute. You probably saw him on TV actually a few times. He wrote a couple of books about AI. The first one I read was Machine Behaving Badly, and it's all about ethics and fairness and explaining, you know, what we're asking the machines to do, behaving in a fair way, but actually what is fair for me is different from what is fair from you and you. So means that, you know, quite often the models would be fair for the person who's developing them, and hence the need for diversity and making sure you have the right guardrails around your AI deployments. And the second book I just received, it's called Faking It, and it's about AI as well. So I cannot wait. I need to read it. Yeah.
And then I suppose from a sort of self shameless plug to your own sort of own sort of like style, leadership, cultivating teams, like, how would you describe you to someone who might be looking to join your team?
Look, I think the key message is we succeed together, right? And we're in this together. We have challenges we're sharing. I'll have your back, but have mine. Make sure we succeed together.
Collaborative approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And look, it's just, I have this approach as well. If you have a problem on day one, that's our problem. On day two, that's your problem. And on day three, you have a problem. So you have a problem, you need to raise it straight away. So at least we can solve it together. Yeah. It's just, problems, they're not like good wine. They don't age.
Oh, God, yeah. They like fester and then become bigger and worse.
So I really encourage this collaboration. But I think it's for us later to make sure we have this kind of safe environment where people are feeling confident to speak up. And that's not easy, but that's what we should aim for.
And if they have someone like you, at least they've got a good advocate in the business, you know.
I'm trying.
It's mutual.
I guess we're learning every day, right? But yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Last and final sort of question that kind of ties into the cultural aspect. Like, what are your thoughts on dress code and like flexibility and I suppose just like the future of work potentially? Because we're kind of living in this new world, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. So a bit of history. When I was in France back in the days, everybody was dressing up to go to work and men wear ties. So it was, I'm used to it. And when I moved to Australia, I thought, what's happening? Everybody's underdressed. It's just like, what? Okay. Look, I love my dresses. I love, you know, dressing up because it's just me. That's how I was raised. A bit old-fashioned, maybe. I like it, but you do whatever you want. It's just, for me, it's irrelevant. It doesn't mean you're going to behave differently or, you know, I need your brain in your emotional connections with your colleagues and how you interact. If you're in shorts or with a suit, I don't care. It's just at the end of the day, it's what you do. And then I think the question about where do you work, I think it's going to become less and less relevant. But yeah, same thing. I like the human connection. I really missed it during COVID. I like to have anchored days in the office where everybody turns up and you can really interact and, you know, and build this strong link. And I'm probably super old-fashioned because that's how I live most of my professional life, like 5 days a week in an office. It was challenging, but that's what I'm used to. But now I really appreciate to have quiet times. And these anchored days in the office, it's just everybody's interacting. That's so good. You can feel the energy. But if you have like a document to read or to write, it's very challenging. And even today, actually in the office, it's just, but that's normal that people are using this time to be together. But it's just, I think you have to pick your times to do different type of work. But the human connection for me, it's a plus. But look, during COVID, we delivered a program on time, on budget. We were all online, but we had to put extra effort in connecting and making sure we were relating. So it was extra effort. It worked, but I like a little bit of human connection.
I think that's important. I think, but obviously, like you said there, everyone's quite different when it comes to like dress sense. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're like going to be worse at their job or better or whatever. Exactly. It just is like expressing themselves, which is good most of the time. Sometimes there's the odd occasional outlier, but fine. and then I suppose the like working rhythm, like everyone's like flexibility to me is like, I don't know, like you've got different setups. You might be able to work remotely somewhere in a different country, like et cetera, but a lot of people get access to that. But I think everyone has their own different working rhythm per day, and like you said there, as long as you've kind of know what you need to do, know what you need to achieve in order to deliver wherever you are, it doesn't matter too much. But that human connection is really important. I think
During COVID, the rule was in the team, I was saying to all of them, you know, some of them will work early before your kids wake up, or some of them will prefer to work evenings because you want to sleep in or you want to exercise in the morning. And everybody in the team, it was very diverse actually. They were at different points in their lives and they had different things to, you know, get them going during COVID. So the deal was you choose when you work, but you don't change every week. So everybody knows you're available from that time to that time, right? And you have to make sure that at least once a day we get together, so kind of stand upright and you can connect with the others and everybody knows what you're doing. Because if we don't have this moment all together, it doesn't work. And everybody, you know, did it and actually was working really well because I gave them the flexibility and they embraced it. But they were super honest with each other in terms of, actually, you know what, in 3 days' time, I won't be available in the afternoon because I'll be working super early in the morning because I want to get out of town. And
yeah,
look, it's all right. We're all humans and we need to be in the best situation or kind of condition to do our work. But the deal was, you have this flexibility, but we have deadlines, so you get organized as you want. But if someone is dependent on your work, you have to make sure they know what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. Individually led, I should say.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Yeah, I agree. Well, I feel like that's been a really well-rounded, somewhat, we've jumped on little tangents, but come back to quite relevant stuff. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, it's been for so having good. Me. Yeah. That was good fun. Love you. Your questions.
So something really important for us here at Precision Sourcing is mental health. It's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year or so. And we're lucky enough to have partnered with the Black Dog Institute. And we're going to be doing a lot of events with them this year. A lot of our events, money will be going towards them. And they're out there aiming to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. So if you wish to support the cause, please donate via the link in the bio on this podcast. And you'll be seeing a lot more information about Black Dog over the next year.